Tales through time.
Welcome to our third episode of Tales Through Time. I'm Keegan Wedwick.
And I'm Troy Newman. For anyone that's just joining us now, thank you so much for tuning in. For anyone that's been with us from the beginning, we hope to continue with the same quality of storytelling that we've been giving you so far.
If you're just joining us, I just want to give a little bit of a breakdown of how our episodes are structured. We'll start off giving a little bit of an anecdote to the story that we're about to go into. And basically, we'll just play little short audio clips of that person's story, comment on it, and that is kind of pretty much how it goes.
For anyone who's joined us for the first two episodes, you may remember the stories we've been sharing so far have had pretty big ties into my own life. This entire project started when my grandfather was diagnosed and treated for cancer. I decided I wanted to share his story and thought that I could do that for others as well. While out interviewing many of these people, I was trying to think of a way that I could share my own story as well. The problem with that, as anyone that is close to me can tell you, is that I have little to no memories of my childhood. So, I decided to go to the source. Today's story is about my mother, Kathleen Sullivan, the youngest of three kids by a rather large margin, yet the first to have children.
Brian was 8 years older than me, and Sean was about 3 years older than me. Grandma and Grandpa would go and have to go to work in the summers, and Brian would watch us, or supposed to be watching us. And, you know, he was so much older that he was annoyed by it. There were times he wouldn't let us eat lunch, so he'd go outside and play, you know, bounce a racquetball against the barn. And while he was doing that, Sean and I would cook something really quick. But Grandma had the stove that showed that the burner was still hot afterwards, so we'd have to get ice cubes and melt them on the burner to make sure that that didn't show it was still hot, so Brian wouldn't know that we cooked something. He wasn't the nicest brother to us when he had to watch us. I remember he used to punch us in the arms. And even when he did it to Sean and wasn't doing it to me, I'd still cry because I knew how much it hurt and I didn't want him to be doing it to Sean.
Did that end up changing at some point?
Yeah, he just got worse. No, it just got to the point where we just, you know, he got older. He went to a Christian prep school, and it was a boarding one when he was in high school for his first couple years of high school. So when he was 14, he left for that and was gone for a couple years, just came back on the weekends. So I didn't really see or talk to him much then. And then, you know, a couple years after he came back, he went to college. So, I mean, we've never really talked or anything. We see him holiday functions and that's it.
I kind of got lost in the story. I was waiting to hear more. I thoroughly enjoyed her talking about her brother, and it kind of relates to back to having to watch my younger brother because we are 10 years apart. It happens when you're young and having to babysit someone younger. You kind of get a little annoyed.
Sean and I would pick, like siblings do that are closer in age, just kind of pick at each other. And, you know, he'd get pissed at me and push me around and I'd yell and whine at him. It was better than Brian and I, but, you know, when I moved out of the house and Sean had to work in Viroqua, he came and stayed at my place for the summer, so he had somewhere. And I mean, it was better than Brian. It wasn't a close sibling relationship, but it was better a little bit.
Do you think it was the being closer in age that helped with that?
Yeah, I think so. Just both of us, when we were younger, having to deal with Brian and together. And yeah, just being closer in age, I think, helped with it. You know, we were at least in high school at the same time.
I think because you're closer in age, you have more things in common. You're kind of going through those same similar experiences. When you're younger, there is such a, you know, a maturity age gap between, you know, someone who's 12 and someone who obviously is 2. As I got, you know, gotten older, my siblings have gotten older. I feel like you definitely grow closer. It's a better understanding. They've had more life experience and you can have those conversations with them.
My oldest sister is only 2 years younger than me, and she and I are understandably a lot closer than I am with the rest of my siblings who are 15 plus years younger than me. As you just heard there, Sean and Brian are my uncles. What may not have been clear, though, is just how young my mother was when she first got pregnant.
When you think back on middle school, what would you say is the memory that first comes to mind?
Well, I was, like I said, a lot different than most kids. So, you know, I guess the biggest memory would be when I was in eighth grade and, you know, I had a boyfriend who was a senior in high school and find out I was pregnant. That's the one that comes to mind the most, I guess.
She was 13 at the time when she learned she was pregnant and 14 when I was born.
I would say that would have to be a memorable moment that would stick out in middle school.
Yeah, maybe a little bit more than the rest of those middle school times.
You know, the friends that I had at the time, they were, you know, they're girls, they're 13, you're excited. It sounds stupid, but I remember other kids' parents, of course, all of a sudden I was the troublemaker, even though I've never been in trouble before at this point, but I was the troublemaker, and so their kids couldn't hang out with me anymore. And then grandpa said I should have an abortion, and I said, no, I won't do that. I would never have an abortion. I said, yeah, no, I want to keep it. I can't imagine having an abortion. I can't imagine being able to give a kid up for adoption. So I did. I pretty much, you know, I kind of have always been strong-willed and do what I want, and I don't really care what other people say, so.
I think she touched an important part, the part where now she's been labeled as a troublemaker simply for getting pregnant. As she mentioned, she's like, she'd never done anything that would qualify her as a troublemaker, but now her friends basically had to stop being her friend, it sounds like.
There can be a lot of stigma that comes with a pregnancy depending specifically on your age. Nowadays, marriage is not as much an issue, but age still can be.
Well, the other thing is that the greater commentary is that the blame is put on her. Well, one, she's a child, essentially, but then also, you know, being a woman as well. I'd be interested to hear how it reacted on the boyfriend side of things.
She was an eighth grader, and this man was a senior in high school. But I was curious what it was about him that caught her attention.
When I was younger, you know, I just didn't have a whole lot of attention from grandma and grandpa. So they never said they loved me or anything like that the whole time I was growing up. So I think I just kind of craved attention from people. And, you know, grandma talked to me more than grandpa did. He is a very quiet person, never says anything. I think I maybe heard 5 words from him the whole time when I was growing up. You know, in Viroqua, they used to have the teen dances. You know, you could go and watch a movie, and then they had the teen dances after the movie on Friday nights. And I was there with some friends, Diana being one of them. And she is actually the one that introduced me to or asked your dad to dance with me, because, of course, you don't ask someone yourself at that age. You know, he was older. He was, you know, at that point, a senior in high school. I don't know, he's one of the tallest people there.
Tallest.
So I don't know, he just seemed like a fun person at the time, and he just seemed like he was having fun, and, you know, older. I think the older is the biggest part, to be honest with you. He's just older. And it was nice to get away from the boys that were my age, who were just annoying.
It just seems that her relationship with her father is what kind of brought upon, she said herself, you know, looking forward to him, and that the boys her age weren't mature. And I know that some people say that they might pursue someone older because they are more mature. That's something that really does attract people to someone.
From my own experiences with my grandfather, her father, obviously, I can tell you he is a very quiet man. If you don't ask him something that requires him to elaborate, he'll essentially just nod or shake his head.
He's a man of few words.
Very, very few words.
I'm sure when he speaks, everyone is listening.
So we heard a bit about the reactions she got for the pregnancy from those around her in her life, but I was also curious what it was like having a child so young and yet still going to school and whatnot.
Like I said, that was in January of my freshman year. I was lucky. Grandma helped me a lot with you. You know, she paid for daycare so I could go to school, and she did wake up in the middle of the night most of the time with you. So I continued my freshman year, went back, did my sophomore year, and then it was that summer, it must have been that summer, that I moved out. Right before I turned 16, I moved out on my own because, you know, your dad and I had split up. He was off doing who knows what. But I moved with in with Diana first because Diana also had a kid. And so I stayed with them for about a month until I got my own place. Your dad and I had gotten back together in between there. And so I ended up living with him for a while. And I got pregnant with Star. And we were only together for maybe a couple months. And then I moved into my own place.
So at 16, she's moved out of her family. Does she end up discussing more about why she moved out?
She talked a little bit about it later in the interview, how being so strong-willed, as she mentioned earlier, she just wanted to do things her way, I guess I would say. Mm-hmm. She didn't go into any specifics. Like, I don't think there was a specific incident that forced her out of her parents' home. Mm-hmm. But at 16, she decided to move out.
And I like that we're talking about this, because if you hear in the news about someone under 18 getting pregnant, you're only hearing of like the incidents or of it happening. But
to hear about the repercussions.
Exactly. And what it's like to have a child, you know, so young.
After moving out of her parents' house, my mother's life started to change. Eventually, she would stop going to high school and she would end up moving to Sparta.
Once I moved out Grandma and Grandpa's house, they told me if we let you move out, you gotta make sure you keep going to school. Well, of course I didn't. So my whole junior year I was gone. And then I had Star that summer. And was actually dating this other guy who wasn't very nice to you guys. And you guys were taken away for 2 or 3 months. And I had to move back to Grandma and Grandpa's so we could get you back. And I had to go back to school my senior year. And at that point, you know, I've already missed my whole junior year. What's the point of this? You know, is what was going through my head. What's the point of even going back? This is ridiculous. This doesn't even make sense. But I did it. I want to make sure that you guys were with us. But I missed a lot. You know, I'd skip a lot of days. I was there maybe 3 days a week. School was always easy for me. I never had a problem with the academic part of it. I mean, things just came to me, except for history. That never stuck.
What was it like to lose your kids at that time?
That was scary because I lived in Sparta at the time. And the guy that I was with said he was going to Walmart or something like that. I don't remember. And he just never came back. And all of a sudden, there's this knock at the door. And it's this woman and a guy. And they tell me they're from social services. And that they had a complaint. And I'm like, huh? And so I let him in. And they're like, we need to bring them to the hospital. We need a doctor to test them. Or not test them, but to look at them. And so I'll never forget going to that hospital. And with you in particular, they had the sheet of paper and had the little picture, you know, of a body on it. And he was supposed to mark wherever there was a bruise or wherever there was a, you know, whatever, contusion or whatever you might have had. And I remember looking at that when he was done and looking at you and thinking, what is he seeing that I'm not seeing? I mean, because, yeah, you were a klutzy kid. You were. You always had bruises. But he had almost a whole body filled in pen. I mean, it's a good thing it happened. You know what? This guy was doing, I didn't know because it was in the middle of the night. And, you know, you're 17 and you're naive and you don't believe it's happening. And, you know, you believe what he says. Oh, yeah, he woke up last night and ran into a doorknob or, you know, things like that. And you're stupid enough at that point to believe it. And so it's a good thing it did happen. It sucked how it happened.
Was that kind of an eye opener for you?
Yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah. Because otherwise, I don't know. I mean, otherwise it could have gotten worse, and I don't know if I would have ever believed it on my without having the other, you know, without that coming up and then thinking back like, wait, yeah, he did have a bruise that day, and this is the way he said, that sounds kind of stupid. Or there was a time that you woke up in the middle of the night and went in the fridge and ate a whole chocolate pie to yourself. Well, because he hadn't, I'm assuming, hadn't fed you and you were starving to death, you know, and it's like things I didn't realize at the time were happening that were. And probably it could have gotten a lot worse. And I'm glad that it happened. I mean, not glad it happened the way it did, but glad it happened so it made me realize what was going on.
So he just left one day to go to the store.
Oh, they picked him up. That's why he never came back. The cops got him.
So you always hear about those situations where children get taken away from their home and one parent typically says, like, they either don't believe the accusations or they say something like they never would have guessed that it was happening.
It's unfortunate. And like she said, she's not glad it happened, but she's glad it was brought to light by a professional and they showed her what was happening and it made her realize, oh, putting two and two together. When you were sitting there listening, how did you feel?
So this is the first time I had ever heard this story. For anyone who may be lost by this point, she is talking specifically about me. I am the child that the doctor checked up on. I am the child whose notes were essentially completely covered in pen, highlighting various injuries and whatnot that this man had apparently done. However, like I said at the beginning of this episode, I have essentially no memories of my childhood. So my mother could have been telling me a story about someone else for all it really matters to me, because I do not associate any trauma or any kind of negative feelings back to that time, because I have no memories of that time.
But you did like chocolate cake. Chocolate pie?
Chocolate pie, apparently. Just scarfing down an entire chocolate pie myself.
I mean, what kid wouldn't do that?
That's why I really did it. I had heard fragments of this story before, but this is the first time I had heard it in its entirety like this. Mm-hmm. And I'd always kind of suspected that maybe my issues with lacking memories from my early life might have had some relation to this incident. I'm not a doctor, not a psychologist, so I can't say for certain. But if I had to guess, I would say it's probably more to do with this than anything else.
For anyone who is a child psychologist, you know, feel free to chime in and let us know like the effects of trauma in the young age, you know, what that would do.
After my sister and I were taken away by social services, my mother decided to move back in with her parents to try to work towards getting us back. A few months later, we were all back together, and soon after, my mother would decide to move away from home again. This was when she would meet the man she would spend nearly two decades with, the same man that would end up raising me and my sister.
Chuck's daughter is actually about 4 months older than I am. Actually met Chuck when I was very young, when I was probably about 10 years old, because I went and stayed overnight at her house once. But Beth was infatuated with Jason, and we were out, it was Halloween, and we took you and Star trick-or-treating. And then Grandma brought you back to her place, and Beth wanted to meet up with Jason really bad. So we went over there, and we just all started hanging out. Yeah, you know, he was old enough to buy us alcohol.
The really important bit.
Yes. At that time, yes.
So how did you two end up dating then?
You know, while I was there, it was funny because there was this guy, he was there and he was like a year younger than me, but Beth was trying to get me together with him. And I just knew that he wasn't someone I wanted to be with. He could be a not very nice guy at times. And so anyway, we just ended up staying there with Chuck and Jason for a while. And I don't know, it just kind of happened after we had been there for so long that we got together.
For anyone who hasn't been keeping up with our episode so far, Chuck was the subject of our second episode. He was the man who would stick around and essentially raise my sister and I.
It's nice to hear Kathy's point of view of the meeting, kind of what led up to that. And so I do enjoy listening to those parts.
Chuck never really went into how he met my mother, just kind of that they met, she would be a very important person in his life, and they would be together for 19 years. And he didn't really elaborate much more on it besides saying that they would have a son themselves as well.
And it's all just chance meeting. It's and like I mentioned earlier, like we heard his side of the story about how they met, not how they met, but that they met, and then of hearing hers, and that simply because her friend Beth was interested in his son, that's how they met. It's just how we don't realize these small little moments kind of lead into long-term things.
At this point, my mother had again dropped out of school. She did not end up graduating with her class, but she did go back to get her GED.
Did you continue your education afterwards?
I went to TC for a little bit for nursing. I made about halfway through, and while I was in clinical one day, I'm standing there, and you know, they taught us how to do stuff, and we're supposed to be doing stuff, and I'm standing there watching one of the other people that I was in class with put a chest tube in, up the nose down into the stomach, and I thought, I don't want to do this to people. and that was the last class I took for that. I just figured out it's not for me. That's not for me.
Why'd you go to nursing in the first place?
You made better money at it than most other. Honestly, you know, that was the first thing. There were always jobs you could find in it, always. You know, so I knew that once I graduated, I'd be able to get something right away in the area I wanted. And, you know, I was a CNA before that, so I was already kind of in that hospital or nursing home setting, and I was used to it, so it just seemed like the logical next step.
So in my eyes, this is kind of a success story, because you always hear about someone who's so young, ends up having kids, they drop out of high school, and that essentially defines the rest of their life. Whereas my mother, she decided to go back, and she decided to get her GED, and she even worked towards a college degree as well.
And that can be tough. I mean, even being an older adult and having kids and trying to go back to school can be challenging. I personally can't imagine trying to go through school again and also having to take care of a child. I do completely understand her dropping out after seeing the chest tube. I originally started pre-med thinking I was going to become a doctor. And then I realized watching medical shows is a lot different than actually being involved. And I would basically want to faint or so.
We've talked a little bit about my military experience in previous episodes, and I did have a little bit of experience with medical stuff in the military as well. When I went to basic training, they were still doing medic training for all soldiers, and I had to stick someone with an IV.
What? That's a nope. That's a no thank you for me.
We had to stick each other. So I stuck someone and they ended up sticking me as well. It was essentially just an army medic walking around and taking a look at the needle and being like, yep, that looks like it's in
there.
That
looks good. Okay, let's start the drip.
I say it was that easy because the guy who stuck me, the medic went around, approved it, but something was definitely wrong and I felt it. It turned out the guy who stuck me had completely blown the vein. It means you get the needle into the vein and then you keep going all the way through the vein.
Oh.
So he wasn't in my vein anymore. He was more in the muscle of my arm. And for the next few days, I had this massive bruise all the way up my forearm. That's my experience with the medical field.
Mine was I was a medical assistant at a residential care facility. And that's when I knew was because one of the residents there had a giant sore. And I had to treat it. And I almost passed out while treating it. I had to go sit down. So that's how I knew.
Getting back on track, though, earlier you mentioned how it could be difficult raising two young children and still going to college yourself. In addition to all of that, I was also now old enough to start going to school.
I remember you have Mrs. Korn for kindergarten. And your very first day there, which was already hard enough, I'm bringing my baby to kindergarten, his first day of school. And I got a call from the teacher, and all I hear in the background are all these cute little voices singing a song. It was the cutest thing ever. And I just start crying, like, oh. I can't remember what you called for. You'd forgotten something or something like that. But yeah, definitely I was the youngest parent. You know, I'd go pick you up at the end of the day, and I got all these old people looking at me like, why did his sister picking them up for you? Yeah, until they saw me there every day.
That's funny because I also had Miss Korn as my kindergarten teacher, but I actually don't remember meeting you until fifth grade. That's at least my memory.
Yeah, like I said, I have like essentially no memories of my early childhood. It's kind of funny hearing it from her side of things because you always think how it's the child, that's really sad to go to their first day of kindergarten. But for her, when she received a call from the teacher, she started crying because of all these little voices in the background.
I wish we could remember what we were even singing, and that would have prompted that.
As we mentioned earlier, my mother and Chuck would end up being together for 19 years. During that time, they would get married, and they would end up having a son of their own, my little brother Christian, who was born during my high school years.
You know, when I got pregnant with Christian, that was a surprise, because for all this time, I'm thinking, oh, you know, I'm almost done. And then guess what?
Nearly 15 years between my sister's birth and Christian's. You yourself have a pretty significant distance between you and your brother, right?
So there's three of us, and we're each 10 years apart. I'm the oldest by 10, and then the youngest, I'm older by 20. We were jokingly calling it the one every 10 rule. So when that came up again, I was like, are we expecting another sibling? But I could imagine, you know, being like, I'm almost done. I'm going to have the house to myself. You know, my kids are almost gone. And then be like, nope, you know, I got to do this for another 18 years.
My mother ended up getting pregnant again with my little brother Christian when I was around 16 years old. And shortly after, I would join the Army.
I just remember you going to that career fair or wherever it was where the recruiters were at, and you came home and said that you signed up for Army Reserve. And I'm like, so I thought, okay, I can still get him out of this because he's not 18. He has no legal rights to sign this contract. So I thought, I'm going to talk to him first. Like, so I remember talking to you, like, are you sure this is what you want to do? And you said, yeah. And I said, you've never talked about this before. Tell me why. And you talked about ROTC and how it would pay for college and all the benefits in it. And I said, you're positive because you'd already set up a time for them to come visit us at our home. And he said, yes. I said, okay, well, you have until that date to change your mind, because at that point, I'll be signing the papers and we can't get you out of it anymore. You're clear. You wanted to do it. So you did. I'm not one to hold back my kids. You know, if it's really something they want to do, unless it's something that they shouldn't be doing, you know, I'll let them go for it. So.
What was it like seeing me off at that time?
It was sad. I'll never forget. You were going. I think you took a bus to Milwaukee or something, didn't you? I gave you a big hug and I watched you see you cry. So I'm like, okay, bye, Troy. And I turned around. And you left me. You left me for a whole summer. I was so happy when we came to see you when you graduated, though. It was exciting.
What was that like?
It was so much fun. Well, you know, Christian was like 8 months old, so I had a ton of stuff for him. We had the Vibe, we had Star, we had to drive a lot in Oklahoma, which was like a 15-hour drive. So we woke up at like 3 o'clock in the morning because I thought the more we get on the road with Christian sleeping, the better. And so we fed him at 3 o'clock and got in the car. We made it to like 10 o'clock before he woke up. And so we're like, okay, we're going to stop, have breakfast, all that good stuff. And it was actually a pretty easy drive. We were in Kansas City at that point, so we'd made it a long way. And then kept driving after that. And about half an hour before we got to the hotel, Christian just started screaming and crying and throwing a fit in the back seat. He was done. He did not want to be in there anymore. And I'm like, half an hour, baby, half an hour. So close. We finally got there and he's got snot running down his face. He's red. But we made it. And we had fun when we were there. You know, we went to your base and saw all the different drills that you guys did. And it was hot. I was just very happy when they finally said, okay, you guys are whatever. And you got to come over to your families. And it was nice. It was good to see you.
Her storytelling is just so good, like the way that she can bring back those memories, because, yeah, I mean, I can imagine, you know, having your child kind of go off to the military. And I like how she mentioned that, you know, she tried to maybe convince you to talk you through, like, okay, let's work through this. But like she said, I think, in my opinion, a good parent is obviously talking to your child about a decision. But, you know, again, it's their life. And at that point, you got to do what you're going to do.
the military to me was more of just a means to an end. It was how I was going to both get to and get through college.
You know, if I was to ever have my own children, I think I'd be in the same position as Kathy. Is like, you want to talk to your child about their decisions, but at the end of the day, you just want to make sure they're happy doing what they're doing and it's for the right reasons. And hearing her about letting you go, like, not wanting to cry and be like, okay, bye, made me laugh.
We did have some contact while I was in basic training. They essentially take all of your personal effects and lock them up in a closet. That included my phone. However, there was probably once a month we could use a phone. So we did have a little bit of contact. That's how I was able to get a hold of them and tell them about specific time and location for basic training, graduation, and whatnot. We were also able to remain in contact through letters and all that other good stuff.
And so how was it spending that time in Oklahoma?
As my mother said, it was hot. I went to basic training in Fort Sill, Oklahoma for over the summer months so I could get back to high school and go for senior year, because I went to basic training between junior and senior years of high school. So my mother and Chuck were still together. When I was in college, their relationship came to an end.
We just got stagnant, never did anything. Yeah, I could never, ever say anything bad about Chuck. He's a great guy. He's a great dad. You know, he would do anything to make almost anyone happy. I mean, even to this day, I know he would help me with anything I needed if he could. He's a great guy. It's just that, when you got someone who's given into your everything you want, it just gets boring. And at a point, you just start feeling like, is he just dealing with me or does he want to be with me? You know, that type of thing. Like, can he just do all this so he doesn't have to talk to me about other things? Or it's just so hard to explain, because when you say it, you're like, oh, he's doing everything for me. It was horrible. It's so hard to explain. And I'm not doing a very good job of it. But, you have to have some opposition in your life. And I didn't have that ever with anything.
Her explaining it, I'd like to how she did come back and kind of realize like how it sounded like, oh, having someone that does everything for me and how bad. But I think, I understand what she's trying to say is that she couldn't tell if he was doing everything because he really cared, or it was just keep something complacent, or just like keep the peace. But also, like, as she mentioned, you need a little zest in your life just to kind of shake things up. They were together for 19 years, and that is in and of itself a long time. I mean, we see in the tabloids, celebrity marriages, ending after only months.
Hours even.
But it's always good to hear that even after, the relationship ended, that they're still on great terms.
Chuck is an incredible guy. If he is capable of helping you with something, he will go out of his way to do it. I look back fondly on my time with Chuck, and I think we still to this day have a good relationship. It was shortly after my mother and Chuck ended up getting a divorce that she would go on to meet her next love interest.
I met Tom just after Chuck and I were ending things, because I started going out to Cashton, to Diane's bar and stuff, and I met him there. I was there with Diane, and they had a mystery shot, and Todd was sitting over on the other side. He's like, I'm going to buy them the mystery shot. And so the bartender went and poured us, it was me, Diane, and one of our other friends, poured the three of us the mystery shot. And thank God Diane was the first one to take. She's like, don't drink it, it's gone bad. So he started laughing. And we just started talking from there.
What was he like?
Tom was a good guy. he was raised right, you could tell. I remember coming to La Crosse and we were going, because we're going to be moving in together, and we went to some rummage sales to get, end tables and stuff like that. And we'd stop and we'd look, and as we're leaving, he's like, thank you, sir, or thank you, ma'am. He was always proper when it came to that kind of stuff on how he addressed people. And it was nice to hear that from someone, because you don't always, a lot of times people are just so grumpy and they just walk off, or they're like, oh, why'd I come here, But that wasn't him, and he was always so nice about everything. I mean, he had a grumpy side to him, too, but it's not necessarily just to be grumpy. Like one time, this lady had come to the bar, and we had talked to her. She was there quite a bit. We had talked to her before, and And she's like, she says to us, do you want to see my babies? They're out in the van. And I thought she meant puppies or something, you know, because who else would be out in the van? And so I said, yeah, I want to see them. I'm like, come on, Tom, we're going to go see your babies in the van. I call them babies too, thinking puppies still. And we go out, and here she has her three kids buckled up in the backseat of her van while she's inside drinking. And I'm like, oh, you mean your babies? I couldn't believe it. And Tom was just the type of person that something like that would get to him. He was pissed, and he went and he punched the side of the building, hurt his hand, because he was just so pissed off about it, and there was nothing else. When he had his anger, he didn't let it out on other people normally, but it came out in some way.
I'm sorry. There are no words to describe. I would have had the same reaction as both of them. Like, my babies, this woman is drinking in a bar with her three children in a van strapped. Like, what is happening? I mean, I don't want to say, like, this would happen in Wisconsin. Like, I'm, you know, it should never. But, like, yeah, that's upsetting. One thing that got me thinking is that, you know, she had two partners when she was younger that were not great, obviously. As she was telling this story about, you know, we're talking about Chuck, and then when she brought up Tommy, it just made me realize that, you know, after those first two, that's, I'm glad that she found someone that was nice and that actually, like, treated her and her kids well.
So Tom was a really good guy, turned out to be a great father, but they were only together for 2 years before Tom ended up passing away.
That was horrible. You know, it was the day after Valentine's Day. The night before, I wasn't grumpy, but I get in my moods where I just feel a little depressed or whatever. And that's kind of how I was feeling the night before. And I couldn't sleep, so I went out and slept on the couch. And so he was in the bedroom, and Summer's crib was in our bedroom. And, you know, it was a Thursday night, so like I said, he didn't work Friday, so he would wake up with her on Thursday nights. So I laid out on the couch forever, couldn't fall asleep. And I finally did. And then at 5 o'clock in the morning, Summer's crying. I'm like, Tom. And he wasn't getting her. So I go in there and I throw the blankets off him. I smack his ass and I said, get up. Nothing. And I finally realized that he's face down in these pillows and there's blood on the pillow. And I'm thinking, oh, shit. And Summer's over there screaming and crying. And they've always told me that when he's had a seizure, not to call anyone because then he'll lose his license. So I called Tom and Bonnie right away, and Tom came over and he told me to call 911, which I did. And they got there and had him flipped over and everything, and got him off the bed and onto the floor so they could, you know, work on him because he was still breathing very shallow. And they brought in a med flight. And just the night before, we had been talking about how he always wanted to go on a helicopter. Always wanted to. Never has. And all I thought is, okay, they're bringing med flight. There's still hope. You know, why else would they bring med flight in? And so they got it approved for med flight to land in the parking lot next door, all this stuff. And I'm thinking, oh, you're going to go on your helicopter ride. He's going to be fine. Otherwise, why would they bring in med flight? And by the time med flight got there, he was already gone. And, you know, they came out and they said, you know, we can keep trying, but, you know, they told Bonnie he's starting to get stiff. And Bonnie said, if he's not going to live the kind of life he had, he wouldn't want to be here. So she pretty much told him to let him go, which as a parent has to be one of the hardest things you could ever have to do. But then again, you don't want to see him suffer forever either.
You're hearing someone's, you know, account. We've heard Tommy's father, and now we're hearing Kathy's the night that it happened. And it's always tough to hear, you know, this someone that she loved passing away, and you go in and you see them like that. And the thing is, like, as she mentioned, it's like you can kind of hear a little bit of, I don't want to say guilt, but people always think about the last moments they had with someone. She was thinking back to how she was grumpy that night. It's like, how did she know that she was, what was going to happen just hours later? The last thing you say to someone, things that you say in the moment, and you can still hear that, it obviously still pains her.
I get where people are coming from when they try to say, you always want to end a relationship as if it'll be the last thing you ever say to someone, you know, but at the same time, that's not always possible.
People are human. You know, we have human emotions, but human ranges. We can't be happy and perfect all the time. There are times where you're going to be grumpy or things happen because we don't imagine that would be like the last moment that we would be seeing that person or having that interaction with someone.
My mother and Tommy had one child already, Summer, my youngest sister. However, my mother would end up learning she was pregnant again shortly after Tommy died.
Then I found out 2 weeks later that I was pregnant with Jackson, so. And I knew right away, I knew, because Tom always said he wanted a boy. He wanted a boy. And I knew right away, this is his boy. This is going to be his boy. I know it for sure. I knew it. I knew it as a fact. I never had any doubt.
Even to this day, there are some things that she can look at in her own life that reminds her of the days that she had with Tommy.
Anything come to mind when you think about his wake and funeral?
Well, Anna found my orange. He had given me, so for Christmas, before he passed away, he asked me what I wanted. And I said, I don't know, get me something orange. And so I'm at work at the bank, and he was at Walmart in Viroqua, and he comes, he's like, I looked all over, and this is the only thing I could find that was orange, and it's a plastic orange. And I'm like, okay, it made me laugh. And so I showed Anna, I'm like, look, my orange. Anna says, you should bring it home and have him write stuff on it. And so I'm like, that's a good idea. So I brought it home and had him write stuff on it. He wrote little things on it. And I brought it back to work to show Anna. And she's like, oh, it's your love orange. And so I had this orange at work. And one day it just disappeared. Like, what happened to my orange? And I couldn't find the thing anywhere. This was like a week before he passed away. I couldn't find that thing. And then he passed away. And the wake came. And Anna comes the week. She's like, I found something for you. And she hands me my love orange. And I'm carrying around this plastic orange at his wake. And everyone's looking at me like. And so I tell him the story of it, how it was lost and Anna found it. I still don't know where she found it, but she did somehow. She found my love orange. So Heidi, his sister, was there, and she's while she was here that week after he passed away, came and gave me one of those things you put signed baseballs in, the case with the thing, and gave that to me. They're like, for your love orange. And so it's still sitting there today.
It's so cute. It's a great gift because even though it's just literally a plastic orange, the fact that he searched everywhere for it and then wrote all those little notes on there, whatever those may be.
Orange is my mother's favorite color. That's why she just asked for something orange. And it turned out to be an actual orange. Tommy turned out to be another good guy that my mother would end up meeting. They'd only be together for 2 years because Tommy ended up passing away. My mother would then go on to meet someone else, Drew Thompson.
Yeah, I met Drew on a dating site. Talked to a bunch of other guys at the same time. They were just a bunch of asses. But I didn't meet one good one.
What was Drew like at first?
Well, he wasn't the Drew he is today, that's for sure. I mean, he was fun at first. You know, he'd lived in Dodgeville, so it was almost 2 hours away. But I'd go there and see him for the weekend. He'd come to Viroqua and see me for the weekend. But it was fun when things first started. And then we moved in together and I found out he was talking to other women too.
Did you confront him about that?
Yes, I did. We had a huge fight, but stayed together. Because I had just moved in. I lived there for a month with him and found this out. And it's like, well, I don't know if it was just because I didn't want to hurt my own pride by moving back. Or if it was to give him another chance, but I stayed there. Yeah. And then finally, when everything was starting to work out in our favor, he finally was starting to get his divorce done. He was hired on at his work instead of being through the temp agency. We had finally moved into a bigger house. Everything was going good. And then we got into our last fight and broke up.
What happened?
So it was a Friday. Tom and Bonnie were taking the kids so we could do something. You know, I'm stuck in Dodgeville, not working, just being with the kids. So I go 2 or more weeks without seeing another person except for Drew. And he'd come home every night and be grumpy because he was working such long hours. So it was Friday, and I was excited because I wanted to go see Star that night and all this stuff. And he was just throwing a fit about it. He's like, I'm not going, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, come on, I want to get out of this house. I want to go do something. He's like, it's your daughter. If you want to go, you go see her. I'm like, fine, I will. He's like, leave me money on the fridge so I can go out tonight. And I said, no. And so anyway, he came home and talked him into going, but we weren't going to go to Stars. We're just going to drop the kids off in Tom and Bonnie's and go to Diane's bar. And we did, but while we're there, he's getting grumpier and grumpier. And he's like, I'm tired. I want to go. I want to go. I'm like, we've been here for like half an hour. I need to talk to other people. I need to be able to talk to other people. And I said, if you're so tired, go lay down in the van. So he did. And I stayed in the bar for a while longer. We got a hotel room in Westby. And when we get there, I see his phone. And here, the whole time he was in the van, because he was so tired sleeping, he was messaging another woman. I said, that's it. I'm done. So we had a huge fight, and I drove to Star and Jake's that night. Left him there. Although I felt bad the next day and called him and said, do you need a ride back to Dodgeville? He said, yes. I'll be there in a little bit. Because I had to pack up some clothes and stuff for me and the kids anyway. And the whole ride back, he's like, I lost a sock. I said, I really don't give a shit about your socks. This is what you're worried about right now? He was not the same person he is now. He's all about himself. I mean, and he still is a lot now, but not like he was then.
From when I've talked to Drew, I don't know if it was at that time, but he was calling that kind of like the low point of his life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he pointed to you as the reason he came out better than he was before.
And you know, he says that to me all the time, and I don't let him give me that credit because I'm not the one that did the work. You know, I gave him the opportunity. I gave him chance after chance after chance. And to this day, he's still on his last chance. You know, he's not going to hurt me, and he's not going to hurt my kids anymore. And I've told him that, and since I gave him that last chance, which was probably 6 years ago, he's done good. And he did the work. It's hard to change yourself. It really is. I've tried. I've tried in many different ways, and it's hard to do. But he managed to do it. He did the work. It's not, you know, I gave him the opportunity to do it, but it's because he did it on his own. It's him.
I still think my favorite part was the sock.
I lost a sock.
I have to give her props, though, because that's a very strong, I don't know if the word stance or thing to do, to still continue to speak to someone or still interact with someone when you've found out that they've essentially been cheating.
He has put in a lot of work to change himself. And despite what those stories may have made him sound like, he is actually a really good guy nowadays.
For someone to change does require a lot of effort. Like, you have set thought patterns, behavioral patterns, you have to want it and you have to work at it, and you have to stop essentially your brain from falling into the same routines and actively think differently. She gave him those chances, and I don't want to say she's rewarded, but essentially, you know, they're better now, it sounds like.
Nowadays, their relationship is very good. My mother says that Drew is still on his last chance. They are actually getting married next summer, plans to next summer, if everything works out. Now we're getting into the last couple of years, and the most recent big event that happened in my mother's life, in my life as well, and what sparked this entire podcast was my grandfather's cancer diagnosis.
That was hard, you know, like I said. I didn't have a whole lot of interaction with them growing up. I didn't. And, you know, the first time Grandpa ever told me that he loved me was at Tom's funeral, which made me cry even more at his funeral. It's like, you know, I'm already sad, and now you tell me this for the first time here. But he has said it to me ever since, and he talks to me more now. And, you know, we're finally starting to have a relationship, and then that happens, you know. It was hard because it wasn't fair. You know, I've missed out on all this time up until now, and now this. But thank God he's doing well, and he made it through, and his last scans looked good. So hopefully got that under control.
as we've, you know, we've heard, is that what kind of set her whole life path was the fact that her and her father's relationship wasn't what she wanted. And better late than never, you know, coming around. But I am happy that he's doing better and they have a better relationship.
Nowadays, they have a far better relationship. It's just unfortunate that cancer kind of popped up in the middle of it. But as she said, my grandfather has been treated. Scans are looking good. So he's doing a lot better nowadays. That brings us to today. So, like with our other interviews, I asked her what her hopes are for the future.
Well, hopefully get married next year. Hopefully my two littlest ones will grow up a little bit and stop whining so much. I love them to death, but I can't stand the whining. I don't know. I just, you know, I just want my kids to be happy. I want you to get the job you want and be happy in your career. And I want Star to have a little bit more support in her area for her. And, you know, and I know that she wants to find a job soon. And I hope that she finds one that she likes. I just want all of you guys to be happy. And that would be what makes me happy.
People want those that are important to them to lead happy lives.
And not only that, as she mentioned, she just wants them to be happy. And it's not about what you're doing. It's that what you're doing is making you happy. You know, whatever that it means to you.
This story strongly ties into the last two that we just did and others that we'll do in the future. In particular, we will be talking more about Tommy's life and how those that were close to him look back on his life and his impact on others. I hope you're there to explore it with us.
Thank you for tuning into our third episode. If you have any feedback, we'd love to hear it. If you have any recommendations of people or you yourself would like to be interviewed, definitely reach us by our social media. It's Tales Through Time. You can find us on Facebook, our Patreon. We'd love to hear back from you, get involved.
Again, that's Tales Through Time, TalesThruTime. Recorded in Minneapolis.
And in Viroqua.
I'm Troy Newman.
And I'm Keegan Medwick. Thank you for joining us.